Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line? Now 20% lower. Family plans? Also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 27th through July 7th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McKusick, and we're here to continue our expectations series today. We're talking about Justice Hill and Broderick Washington. Joining me to do that is Ben Mihal. Ben, how you doing?
Doing great, Ken. Excited to chat a little Ravens with you today.
All right, great. We're getting some jumpy video from you. If you would just turn off your video, I think we'll be fine in terms of the audio coming through without hiccups. All right, wonderful. So we'll talk about Broderick Washington, who this is two players who are relatively equal, and I try to divide them into ones, twos, and threes in terms of their relative importance to the Ravens. But both these guys today are two. We'll start with Broderick Washington, rotational interior defensive lineman, probably now the most versatile lineman that the Ravens have in terms of a guy who can play one, three, or five.
Yeah, I was just saying how I kind of chose this pairing as Hill is kind of the main player here. But as I was getting more into it, Broderick Washington probably is slated to have a pretty big role in this team this year. And the versatility is going to be a pretty key part of that, I think. We've kind of going to start to see some roles shifting this coming year as we kind of have Travis Jones and Madubuike being the key players, but Pierce's retirement and kind of the lack of veteran presence on the D-line otherwise is a lot of things to sort out over the next couple of months still, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. John Jenkins, new to the fold. The Ravens kind of have six defensive linemen for five spots as I see it right now, but they'll have to figure out exactly how they're going to work that with Aeneas Peebles now being a new addition via the draft. So they'll work it out one way or another. Washington is entering his sixth year. He's on the second year of his 3-year extension that he signed actually a while ago, but it was an extension that got tacked on to his current contract. So he's still only in the second year of his 3-year extension. And there's essentially no savings for cutting him this year. The cost would be almost exactly what a street player would cost you, about $900,000 in savings. So There's no incentive to dump Washington this year. Next year, that jumps to $4 million, though. And so Washington, in a lot of ways, is under some pressure this year to perform at probably a slightly higher level to make sure he's still good to earn that $4 million payday, basically, in 2026.
Yeah, I mean, I think somebody like Washington is kind of like, this is what good football teams are made of, is having people like this in supporting roles, a little bit of a veteran presence. I also think of Washington kind of having a down 2023 season. Coming into 24, a lot of kind of playing time between Pierce and Urban, but he actually played more than I realized when I looked back at the season. He hit 45% of the defensive snaps, smaller role on special teams. I think just like for D linemen in positions like that, snap count is one of the main metrics we can go off of, really, because we don't necessarily understand the expected role on a play-to-play basis, but we can see how often does your team put you out there. And the fact that he was at 45% last year, didn't really have any counting stats or anything like that, but clearly was on the field a lot. I think he bounced back from what we both agree was kind of a down 23 season for him. And, you know, he could kind of fill in a lot of different places for us this coming year.
I'm going to guess the 45% number you've got comes from PFR, right? Pro Football Reference, because they have a number. And there is a caution that goes with that. Washington missed two games. And so his
games played,
snap
sure.
total is the percentage of the games where he played, the snaps that he played. So it doesn't represent percentage of the season or whatever. That's actually about 39%. It just a small thing with PFR that they really ought to fix. You know,
I didn't realize that actually. Yeah, that's a good point for sure.
Yeah. So mixed season in 2024, he had a high missed tackle rate, was probably the bad thing at 21.7%. It was in the 12th percentile of defensive linemen. The median's 12.5. 86th out of 106 IDL in terms of tackling grade from PFF. So that's also bad, obviously. But it was just based on 5 total missed tackles. He hasn't been a particularly good tackler his whole career, but was a little bit better in his best season, which was 2022. He had 16 stops, so that's pretty good for a defensive interior player who plays as many snaps as he does, but it's below par relative to his missed tackles. So he would, you know, if you're going to have as many missed tackles as he had, you'd want to have more stops. That kind of stops to missed tackle ratio should be about 4, 4.5 for a defensive lineman, as I would account for it.
Yeah, and I think you kind of hit on one of the, I guess, challenges that I found in kind of evaluating, you know, a player like this, where, you know, a lot of his value is not going to be the penetrator. He's not necessarily stout enough to play the nose full time, eat up all these double teams. He's just like, you know, a solid rotational piece. Watching a little more of the cutups of him, though, you know, you see him getting down the line, you see him shedding some blocks. He can get into the backfield, get his hands up a little bit. Kind of can give you a lot of different things. But right, yeah, I'm sure the metrics don't necessarily say that he's a star player and he hasn't been compensated as such either, obviously.
Right. He had a big batted pass year in 2022, which was 6, right before he signed his contract. Yep. And was among the league leaders in that category, led the Ravens. And he that was a real big positive. But he's had really modest pass rush success and modest tackling success, too. I'll give you two big things to look out for that PFF does that I don't really like that much about how they show this, but they'll if you look at the defensive interior players, there's a lot of defensive interior players who have like a red or a yellow rating, a rating under 60 for tackling. That doesn't really, it's not a well normalized category. If I then rank those players, I find that the median is somewhere like 54 or something. It's not particularly good, maybe 56. But anyway, it's not really well normalized. And I think that's been a function of PFF bringing a tougher tackling standard to their own grading. So they've assigned more missed tackles and they're looking back at some 5-year average of missed tackle rates to do their grading. So they're saying, okay, he should have a missed tackle rate of X percent. And then he would get this tackle grade, or they're looking at a rate that tackles are made even on an individual play basis. And then they're assigning him a plus or minus for that play based on it. But however they're doing it, they're not normalizing it the way I would expect it to be normalized for the players. And you can actually tackling is for an interior defensive lineman is one of the places where you can have a grade below 60 and still be pretty good.
Right. I think it's all about context kind of in terms of, right, where is that missed tackle coming from? Is he coming from out of position to try to assist and make a play? Is he responsible for holding up blockers and kind of got an arm out there? And right, that's a little bit next level of film study that you're going in too farther than I am for sure.
Yeah. This is honestly just the math of it. Not even the film, but what you're talking about is very important. It's like there's missed tackles and there's missed tackles. And if you swivel a running back, you know, 135 degrees and he's running in the wrong direction, essentially, you've done something very good, even if you missed the tackle. So that's another element and something
well said, you know, yeah,
really deserves further study. But for this, I'm just talking about the math of missed tackles is not well normalized on the interior. The other thing where Washington does not particularly stand out, but I think he makes contributions, is as a pass rusher. I think he's a little bit of a pocket morpher for starters. But more than that, he has, because he only plays pretty much on early downs, he does play a few third downs. He plays on fourth down when it's a jumbo package and you're trying to stop a 4th-and-1 or a, you know, maybe a 4th-and-2, even if you're against a strong running team. but he doesn't play most third downs. And Jones and Matabike are on the field on those downs. And a few things are true of those downs. One is you have much better pass rushing opportunities when you can pin your ears back on third and medium or longer. You're basically, you don't have a lot of responsibilities that you have to fulfill other than get after the passer. Washington rarely has that advantage on the field. But that's not the only thing. It was surprised. I was really surprised to see this. Washington was actually better on the field. When he was on the field, the Ravens defense was better than when they were without him. So 4.7 yards per play with him in, 5.6 yards per play with him off the field. It's exactly the opposite of what I would expect because he plays mostly first down more than anything. And those plays have the highest yards per play, not third down. Third down, you have a fixed goal, which is a little surprising. But I broader question is, I think it's very difficult to judge him based on a pure metric situation. I don't think he's not a standout interior defensive lineman, but he's also not a terrible defensive lineman. And there's some real value to that.
You could do a lot worse than having, Roderick Washington as your third or fourth kind of interior D lineman. And I know that you've talked a lot through the years, especially last year, about how many D-line IDL are going to be active, but also how many per play. Yeah. And I do wonder if this is the year where we really see this kind of loading up of edge depth. We've got a lot of different body types kind of at the outside linebacker or, edge position. And I'm wondering if this is the year where we kind of see that number go down to closer to two. I mean, you want Jones and Matabike feeling fresh and on the field as much as possible. But I also wonder if you have an opportunity to kind of go with one IDL and maybe more of a race car package with three edge on the field. I'm a big Tavius Robinson guy. I definitely would make sense to see him inside a little bit. I think you've heard a lot about OA kind of bulking up a little bit. Does that mean you see him on top of kind of the guards or centers a little more? Van Noy can give you a little bit as kind of type role. So I think there's some interesting opportunities. And even Mike Green, I'm sure Mike Green would be great kind of one-on-one in a Micah Parsons style, like on top of the center or something like that as well.
Yeah, that's a great point for starters, is that this team has, the last few years, has really relied on multiple interior defenders on pretty much every passing snap, which is not like the Ravens of the Wink Martindale era at all.
Not at all.
They brought in a rush nickel, which is three outside linebackers. They brought in the race car, which is four outside linebackers. They even had a version of the race car they used, I think, six times, where they had five outside linebackers on the field. And if you're really don't trust your interior guys to get pressure, it's one of the things you can do to kind of substitute. It is possible the Ravens will go back to more of that. They've been so short on healthy pass rushers at that outside linebacker position the last couple of years. And it's varied by point in the season too, but they, before they had Kyle Van Noy last year, they were very, very short. They started the season and players you didn't want to be on there on third down were on the field. The year before, same thing. They still had good sack years, by the way, both years, but the presence of outside linebackers just was not where their sacks were largely coming from.
No, it's easy to forget. We had Yannick Ngakoue on the field for a few games last year. Yeah. Think about that situation compared to the potential depth we have this year. We haven't even mentioned an Adisa Isaac. I know there's some talk about Clowney being out there still. A lot to sort out, but I do know that, the investment's clearly been made, and we got a good mix of kind of old and young at that outside linebacker. I also think that a lot of the two-plus IDL per play the last few years is the presence of Michael Pierce, who has just had two incredible seasons the last 2 years. You watch him play, and that guy is rushing the passer better than you realize, obviously completely stout against the run. And so I think there was some of that. It's just simply we want to get our best guys in the field. And, Jones, Matabike, and Pierce is a pretty formidable trio the last few years.
Right. Yeah, they really missed Pierce when they didn't have him last year. He played only 19.8% of the snaps last year during the regular season. They really missed him. And they had other guys in there. Josh Tupou was on his team for 5.3% of the snaps last year. Chris Wormley was back for 2.8%. Those are guys that the Ravens would obviously have preferred not to have on the field. They're losing, you know, the retirement of Brent Urban, I think, is a more significant event than people will consider it as. I mean, it's 18% of snaps for starters. So
Pierce, you
know,
he's right?
only playing. No, this is Brent Urban I'm talking about. Pierce loss is enormous. I don't think there's anybody who would question that. But the Brent Urban loss, I think, is not insignificant.
Agreed.
I think he made a contribution. So Washington has to pick up a role from some combination of both of those guys. Aeneas Peebles will pick up some of it. John Jenkins will pick up some of it. And then they have Jones and Madubuike, of course. And I guess am I missing a player? The only other guy, I mean, Jason Jones is on the practice squad. As
got Jason Jones. I mean, John Jenkins, you know, definitely gives you some of that size that you're looking for from the Pierce loss. But again, you know, 13th season, I believe. So I don't think we'd be all foolish for expecting too much of him, somebody that's available kind of this time of year. I think the thing we haven't really touched on yet is Peebles, right? Like, can Peebles get in on third down a little bit and kind of be a kind of sub package rusher? Is it, you know, is it Madubuike and Peebles? Is it Travis Jones and Peebles spelling Madubuike a little bit? I think that's kind of the biggest thing, that he has a real chance, because I definitely didn't go into the offseason thinking it, but D-line really, you know, we have some questions there for sure.
Yeah, it is. They've gone out on a limb a little bit. Just in order to draft Peebles, they've had to make sacrifices about, you know, who's on the roster and whatnot. Really, it's Peebles for Urban. You're making that exchange in a way, and you're definitely going to lose something in terms of run defense, five tech ability, and whatnot. Peebles hopefully will be a guy who can. I think the best hope I have for Peebles is he'll be a guy who can come in on any down when you have the lead and you're trying to rush out a game. So the other team needs to catch up. You want to get your best pass rushers from the interior on. Aeneas Peebles probably could be that. He's fairly polished in terms of his moves for an interior player, and he might really give you some pass rush there. He's a very smallish guy. I mean, no two ways about it in terms of his size relative to other NFL defensive linemen. So he's got to be a penetrator mostly. And unlike Travis Jones, he's not a guy who I don't think will stand up well to double teams.
No, a unique body type for the Ravens, for sure. Not the type of player we usually see them targeting either in the draft or free agency. So, again, hopefully with some role in mind, or maybe just the value kind of in the sixth round, I think that's a bigger conversation, obviously. But curious to see what his role is. And, right, he has a big chance kind of in the summer in training camp to show his worth and get out on game days.
Yeah, we'll see how that works out for sure. Well, let's jump right into it with what's a good season for Broderick Washington.
I said a good season is, you know, similar snap count to last year, you know, 400 plus snaps, third or fourth guy in that interior rotation, makes a handful of plays, you know, doesn't seem to be a weakness when he's on the field, you know, gets his hand in a few balls, potentially maybe gets in the backfield for a sack or two. And I think that's a totally good season. And then the Ravens defense, you know, top 10, 15 range, something like that.
The Ravens overall is a top 10 or 15 defense.
I think, okay. Yeah, as part of that. Exactly.
Okay. All right. I think after they finished the year last year so strong, I think if the Ravens finished 10th in defense, that would not be a good thing. I think the Ravens ought to have an expectation. It might fall apart. I mean, it might fall apart in the secondary. It might fall apart at the line of scrimmage. I think outside linebacker is the place I wouldn't expect it to fall apart, but you never know. Weak side linebacker could be a problem. I mean, it's not like there's no questions on defense, but it's a fairly well-coached unit, you know, bringing back in Pagano or in a second year, some of the things. I'm hoping for better out of the Ravens defense than 10th in the NFL.
Sure, I expect them to be a top 10 unit, to be clear also. I just mean in terms of a 60 percentile for Broderick Washington kind of being part of that unit. I did, just because you kind of opened the door to it, want to say there was a little bit of talk on some of your other shows about both offense and defense being able to really right the ship midway through the year last year, and I don't think the point's made enough. That's a Harbaugh thing, by the way. You know, that's good coaching from the top. And so I know that you're kind of one of the defenders of Harbaugh. And I think, you know, I think any true Ravens fan can kind of see the the value that Harbaugh brings. But I just thought it was fascinating to really look at week 11 last year, and the offense stops committing penalties and the defense kind of gets the back end figured out a little bit. And, you know, we'll get into it, the Hill thing, but obviously makes the end of the season even more disappointing because they were such a team on the rise in the back half of the year last year.
Yeah, very true. And I don't think it's just Harbaugh. I think it's very broad, the organizational people that helped get the thing turned around. I think the coaching was better, and a lot of it is Harbaugh directing coaching and actually spending time with some of the individual units. But George Warhop turned around the offensive line in terms of the penalties. I don't think that's directed by Harbaugh. Maybe. You know, they had high level meetings and he said, look, George, you got to fix the penalties. But I think Warhop is the one who actually went out and got it done. Along
totally
with the players
fair.
Themselves, of course. Yeah.
Right. Warhop and Ort both clearly grew into their roles as the season went on, for sure.
Yeah. All right. Let me give my good season for Washington, fairly short. Takes a step forward in at least two areas where he's unimpressive in 2024 with a return of tackles, stops relative to missed tackles, batted passes, or more pressure. I can really accept anything. I mean, he's a fairly neutral contributor in a lot of ways, but if he took a step forward, I think it would be a good season. Plays as needed and approximately the league average. Ravens are at least on the fence about his 2026 roster status. I'm putting that at the 60th percentile. That I think the Ravens are going to have to bite down hard pretty much no matter what to eat the $4 million cap hit. Sorry, not cap hit. Cap savings they could harvest next year with all their needs for cap. So they may say no anyway, and it may depend on who they draft and whatever. But I think if his play this year can at least put the Ravens on the fence about that decision, I think he's had a good season.
Well said. No, I agree completely.
All right. How about a great season? What's that look like, Ben?
Yeah. So a great season. I think, gets on the field, maybe even closer to that 50% number, which unfortunately probably means something has gone wrong with Jones or Madubuike, which obviously does not necessarily mean great for the Ravens, although it still could. Great season for Broderick Washington, making more plays, getting that, maybe getting that sack total closer to 3 or 4 or 5, maybe coming back to that batted passes defense number from a few years ago that you referenced, just kind of making more plays. Or alternatively, great season for Washington and the Ravens is he's able to kind of up his impact on a smaller amount of snaps and really be kind of more of a impact player in a more defined role, probably.
That would be good too, certainly. A great season for me, plays 15 plus games, steps up due to circumstance or emergency with 45% plus of the snaps. That'd be a significant increase from this year. I think that's enough for my case. I certainly don't want a year where Broderick Washington plays 58% of the snaps. If that were to happen, things have gone wrong. Versatility
Correct.
Is used well to fill in injury holes. So he'll be needed somewhere. The Ravens did have that remarkable year where they had five guys basically play every snap, and it was 2.20 per play. So they're all averaging 44% of snaps. I don't anticipate that happening again. They'll have some injuries, and they'll need him to fill in, and hopefully he'll do it well. Delivers elements of pass rush at a higher level, be that tipped passes, sacks, or pressures leading to second man opportunities. Any of that would be fine. Any combination of that would be fine. I'm not going to put any specific statistical goals out there. I just want it to be better than it has been so far. Returns to a solid missed tackle rate, and I'm really talking about league average for an interior defender, and a better ratio of stops to missed tackles. That probably means making more plays, by the way, there, because even if he lowered his missed tackles by a couple, I'm not sure he'd get to the exactly right level that I'm contemplating. And the Ravens contemplate an extension. That's, I think, if the Ravens are on the fence at a good season, they're figuring out, look, how do we make him part of our defensive line plans for the next 2 years? And they'll know where they are kind of with Travis Jones, and they'll be in a position where they're having to try to figure it out whether Broderick Washington is part of those plans or not.
Yeah, I think you nailed it with the versatility. I think what you just said that I kind of was realizing as you were saying it is like, we don't necessarily know what the best utilization of him is going to be because we don't know what the need is going to be. And the biggest value for him could be filling in for 4, 6, 8 games for Madubuike, for instance. And maybe we see a little pass rush juice that we're not necessarily expecting, or he's put in situations where he can be featured a little more. Who knows? And right, that's the thing about a football season, that you just got to roll with the punches and hope that your kind of depth players are ready to fill in where needed.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, let's move on. Talk a little bit about Justice Hill, seventh year player. It seems like Justice Hill has been around forever. I mean, he's a 2019 draftee. You know, he's a year after, you know, the great 2018 draft where Andrews and Lamar are still around, but Andrews and Lamar certainly seem like they've been around forever. And Justice Absolutely. Hill has done a broad variety of things for the Ravens. But the one thing he didn't do too much of this last season was play special teams. He's really known as a special teams ace, but he only played three snaps of special teams that were not kickoff return snaps. So he returned kicks, but remember, he was a gunner. He covered kicks. He covered, you know, kickoffs and punts. Not a guy who did that. He had too much of a running back load last year to be used on special teams.
So, yeah, I mean, let me kind of give you my journey with Justice Hill, because this is why I really wanted to highlight him as a player. I'm thinking back to the 2019-2020 seasons, and I just used to hate seeing Justice Hill on the field. I'm thinking of, like, the Titans playoff game. I'm thinking of, like, you know, I really want to see rookie Dobbins on the field more than Justice Hill in 2020 or things like that. I wasn't necessarily as sold on his kind of, like, pass game work, things like that. And over the last 2 years, I've been proven completely wrong. And I think he's turned into a player pretty much, I would say, since Mitchell went down, that I feel like he plays like a new player. And I think this past year, he was just an incredible player for the Ravens. I was just watching highlights of him, rewatching some of the games that he had big games in. And I mean, he's turned into a hell of a player in so many different facets. And I almost kind of made the connection that, like, Hill's play this year unlocks a level of Lamar that we hadn't seen before, with Lamar's willingness to hit him on checkdowns early and often. I'm thinking of the first game of the year, 2024, the Chiefs game, and that the offense, the entire first half is in first and 20, second and 18, just horrible situation. And they're just flaring it out the Hill, and Hill is just picking up 10, 15 yards a chunk. The Ravens offense as a whole this entire season was just completely unafraid of these long down situations. They just, you know, give Hill a little screen look, give him something out of the backfield. And that's not even talking about the pass protection or the improvisational play that he's able to give on longer plays by Lamar. So just as a starting point, I'm just like, he's turned into one of my absolute favorite players to watch now. I really don't know what switch was flipped, but the last 2 years he's been, I mean, you're not the Ravens without him right now.
Yeah, he's been a very valuable player, no two ways about it. And this was his best season, I think, statistically, although you can make the case for 23. They're pretty close in terms of yards from scrimmage, but his rate statistics were better this year. PFF has him for catching 48 out of 52 targets, and it's 48 out of 57, I think, on PFR. So it's a significantly different catch percentage, but PFF usually takes out targets where he was in the line, but the ball was really thrown away, or is grounded in his direction, which is often the case with a screen pass to a running back.
Yep.
But he had only caught 77% of his previous career targets as PFF defines him, but he was over 90% this last year. So that's a big uptick there.
I think the tape showed that too, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. He held on to the
football. He was better on the low catches than he has been in previous seasons, I think. I'm thinking of the Giants walk-in touchdown where they completely turn him loose, but it's a out-of-frame ball where he's able to reach down, still kind of get his bearings, and then just walk it in. Sorry to interrupt you there.
Yeah, no problem. He had a negative A-dot year, and he's got a zero A-dot, dead zero his entire career. But he had a negative A-dot year, but he still had some long tosses to him during the season. So it was a nice mix of base creation underneath, which the defense gets so tight around Jackson and trying to defend him that obviously, you know, if you can properly position Hill, I think you get real good value out of him. One thing I didn't include in my notes, but it is that Hill was exceptionally good when he did not have chip blocking responsibilities. Chip blocking responsibilities really take away from what Hill can offer you on offense. He can give you a lot more good personal location in space if he doesn't have to launch himself into the midsection of that edge rusher. Now, you need that a lot of times. The Ravens need that to protect Rosengarten or even Stanley on the other side. So they've been using Hill a fair amount in that regard. But and his set blocking responsibilities are still going to be what they are when he's in there on patrol to pick up blitzes or to be the second line of defense. No problem using him in that way. He's been pretty good too, by the way. We'll get into that a little bit later.
Definitely.
But when he's free to not have that responsibility, I think his judgment about where to be on an individual play is very good. And then Lamar can find him. Lamar is always, you know, able to adapt to the position of a receiver. He probably does it better than any quarterback in the NFL. And so that's been something that's worked out. And of course, we saw in the Pittsburgh game, probably the best example of that, the playoff game, where he had the end of half touchdown.
Oh, that was
a long, you know, there was a pass block in there by Hill, but then he had ended up releasing after Lamar had kind of danced back and forth to free him. And then Hill was, you know, all alone, walked in for the touchdown with 2 seconds left. And that game was more than a little over at that point. It was about the most dominant half of football the Ravens have ever played.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean I rewatched that that game partially for this and just partially for fun. And you know, there's a little bit of pain in it as well, like I said, because the Ravens clearly were a team that was completely peaking in December and January. But yeah, that play showed.
If you're looking for a better way to unwind, focus, or even get a good night's sleep, listen up. Let me tell you about Mood, the online cannabis company that's changing the game when it comes to functional gummies. They've crafted a whole line up of federally legal THC blends designed to help with everything from stress to sleep to mental clarity and even some spicier needs if you're into that. Now, what makes Mood different? They go beyond just THC. They pair it with herbs and adaptogens to create targeted effects that you won't find in any other dispensary. And every gummy is made with pesticide-free, small-farm American cannabis. So you're getting quality that you can trust. I've tried their sleep gummies. And let me tell you, it takes about 15 minutes, and I'm out cold, no grogginess, no weird side effects, getting some of the best sleep I've gotten in my life when I take one of these gummies. And if you need a mood boost, there are Epic Euphoria gummies, game changers. And right now, Mood is giving listeners 20% off their first order by using the promo code RAVENS at checkout. So head on over to mood.com, find the perfect gummy for whatever life throws your way, and don't forget to use the promo code RAVENS to save 20%.
Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it, it's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line, now 20% lower. Family plans, also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number. Not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same Game Parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.
At all, right? Where it's not only the ability in open space, not only the ability to get into open space, but it's just the mind meld with Lamar that you can really only have by playing with him for 5, 6, 7 years now, right? he really has taken it to another level in terms of understanding the improvisational aspects of like what Lamar's going to do. And on that play in question, he knows that Queen has him. Queen goes and fires at Lamar, and he knows that nobody's going to cover him up there and pops right out. That clearly wasn't part of the play design at all.
I want to talk a little bit about his pass blocking specifically, because he had 61 pass blocking snaps this last year. If you look at the PFF grade for him, that is only his set blocks. His chip blocks don't get counted in that total. And I don't have an exact match on the 61 total pass blocking snaps, but I'm very close. Okay. So there'll be some definitional differences in how long they expect a block to be held before they include it in a, in their pass blocking total. So it doesn't include his chips, even though he obviously is losing his own receiving value when he does chip block, and he's forced to do that. But he ranked 34th among the running backs in terms of grade. I think there were 93 guys who had at least 25 pass blocking attempts, and he ranked 34th, even though his number, again, is below 60. That number is not normalized for running backs. So and it includes fullbacks like Patrick Ricard's in that group, and Kyle Juszczyk, and players who obviously are much more significant blocking assets than Hill was. But Hill works very hard at it. I think he does very well, not just for his size, but for a running back in general.
Yeah, I mean, I think, right, the willingness to stick your nose in there regardless of size, obviously, but he's obviously progressed in the last few years also in terms of his ability to sort, his ability to actually stick on the block. And I think it's a testament to his skill that the Ravens use him in that role as much as they do, because they do have Derrick Henry, and obviously they want Henry to get, you know, more touches versus pass blocking snaps. But Henry's shown that he can be a very good kind of pass protector as well if needed, which he was forced into that role a little bit late in the season when Hill had the concussion. And yeah, I mean, the fact that they still choose to put Hill in that role primarily, it allows you to get the best out of Hill and the best out of Henry, which is the other thing that I really kind of wanted to make sure we hit on with this, is that the presence of Hill was able to maximize Henry the way it was. And it wouldn't have worked the same way if they didn't have somebody as good as Hill in all of these different roles.
Yeah, it's a great point. I mean, the year before, when Keaton Mitchell had the outstanding year, I think the same was true of him and Edwards, but it wouldn't have worked. I don't think nearly as well if Henry had to have even more of a workload. And it could just be, he might have only picked up 10 extra carries, but he might have been in there for another 10% of the snaps as a pass blocker and doing things on third down. And now the Ravens have, you know, they have an interesting and different set of problems at the running back position in terms of getting Mitchell and Hill and Henry all on the field, deciding, you know, where Ali has to be, which my guess is probably on the practice squad to start the year. I don't think that they could go with him. And I don't think there's room for him, but if they it's very possible that they'll want Ali before too much time passes, because you may lose a back, and that's always a risk.
Yeah, I'm very curious about that as well. I was thinking that, you know, I would really hate to see this just be another fifth round pick that gets set on fire. And I did notice that Tyrone Tracy for the Giants, who had an amazing rookie year for running back, was picked one pick after Ali. So I really maybe over fixate on that, because I'm obviously missing a lot of context to that decision by the Ravens, but it does look nice to see somebody like that have such a nice year. And Rasheen Ali is kind of wallowing away behind two or three really good backs.
Were you there for draft night either of the last 2 years, either lurking and watching or either participating? I don't remember having you
not on participating. No.
Okay. But we'd love to have you on as a panelist too, Ben, because your thoughts are well appreciated. But it's also fun to go through that process and say, you know, who are the players that you really want to get at this point? And you have some positional depth to what's going on. And there were about four guys that I wanted at that pick where Ali was taken, who would have been much better, including a couple offensive linemen at that point. It just, it sometimes it works that way. The Ravens, I have their lower round running back picks. I'm going to include Ben Mason maybe in that group as a fullback pick.
Yep.
But Tyler Beatty is, you know, in that group as well. It hasn't, you know, had probably the success rate that they've had at some other positions like safety. Where they've been very good in those rounds. And it's, you know, he calls them lottery tickets. You know how I hate that, the chance of success is a little bit lower in later rounds, and so your bar for success is a little bit lower also in those later rounds, and you just hope you don't waste the pick. But I can't waste sleep at this point worrying about the fact that the 2024 Ali pick did not work out. Already, a lot of that is in the books.
Absolutely.
Our ceiling and our floor for Rasheen Ali should be lower than it was a year ago.
I agree completely. And I think another thing that I had as a note for just kind of Hill and also kind of the Mitchell element to this is they sat out what was considered a great running back draft this year. And if you look at some of the selections, you're looking at, you know, your Jaden Blue or Jordan James or Ollie Gordon in round 6, Damian Martinez round 7. I mean, right. The fact the Ravens chose to sit that out completely when they have all these 6-round picks they're throwing around tells you something, or tells me something, I felt like.
Yeah, I mean, I, in part, I think they know, I hope it tells me that they know something about Mitchell's health that's positive. You know, that they basically are saying not only, yeah, we had 2 good running backs last year, but we always want to be sure and have a third.
Yeah.
And we saw that happen all last year. They activated 3 guys at running back, but they didn't have an RB3 carry forever, it seemed like. But they activated, you know, John Kelly and Chris Collier and those guys. And they were active and just playing special teams, but not making not having carries.
And I had noted Owen Wright also, who kind of, you know, was looking good kind of in the preseason. But they really, this was something else that I kind of wanted to get to, was that the Ravens kind of rolled out 2 distinct offenses, it almost felt like, with one with Henry, one with Hill. And early in the season, you have Ravens fans like losing their mind that how is this a 50-50 split? There was a lot of the penalties we talked about, so they were kind of chasing points and chasing yardage a lot early in the year. But, you know, with Henry, you have this kind of heavier set, downhill attack, more of an at-you-run game that really opens up that deep play action. They kind of hit the tight ends like crazy off of the Henry and Lamar action, which you've nailed a bunch of times. And then Hill, they're just like, you know, we're going to go hurry up. You're in on 3rd downs. We're going to spread it out a little more. They can flank him out a little bit. I know that I sometimes feel like they're giving it away when they kind of line him up as a wide out, that they're looking for that screen out there to him. So I don't always love that, but I do think that their screen game has taken, I mean, it's night and day from Roman to Monken with the Ravens' ability to run screens. And I think Hill's growth has something to do with that as well.
The Ravens drive other teams nuts with misdirection. And some of that misdirection includes Hill on jet motion, or it could include a player like Mitchell on jet motion as a second running back in the game. Ravens didn't really run a lot of pony this last year, 2 running back sets. They ran a few plays, but it was really just a handful. I think this could be a year, given the guys they have, that they will try and do more of that. I could be wrong. It could be LaJonte Wester ends up being the big misdirection asset that they have. If he ends up being a receiving threat, they may feel like he's the better guy to be using as a flanker, to you know, race through a jet motion, to do orbit motion games, to take some of that burden off, say, Flowers' plate.
I had the same thought as you with this one, Ken, and I kind of kept going back to in 23, they broke out this look a few times where they had Edwards as kind of a fullback, and then, you know, one of their smaller backs kind of deep, and I really thought we would see that with Henry and Hill, or eventually Henry and Mitchell. We never did, and kind of brings me to this other thing where I kind of feel like the Ravens have too many, like, options at their disposal right now. You look at all the different mouths they have to feed at tight end and wide receiver and running back. But then I'm like thinking about things like against Pittsburgh in the playoffs, we saw Henry in the backfield with Lamar sweeping behind him. And we only saw that once the entire year. Like, why did we not see that more than that? You know, we never saw Henry with the jump pass or any kind of that kind of action. So I just feel like part of me thinks that Monken's just holding all of this stuff back to the right moment, but then we didn't really see it. And in the Buffalo playoff game, they're trying to run a fake pass to Ronnie Stanley in the red zone. So sometimes I don't really know what's going on with all of that. But I think the fact remains that, yeah, there's definitely some pony opportunities. And I think they're going to try to get the ball into Hill and Mitchell's hands this year.
Yeah. Yeah, I certainly hope that's the case. This is, to me, the opportunity is there to play really fresh legs offense. I hope, if you've been listening to the show, but you've probably heard that term a lot from me, but they have so much ability to substitute 5. They're deeper than they've ever been at all the skill positions. This is an opportunity to wear the hell out of opposing defenses. Now, there is a trade-off there. When you change out all five of your skill position players, or even if you change out one, you immediately give the defense an opportunity to substitute in an unchecked manner. So you want to be careful of that. You probably slow your own time to the line of scrimmage as well when you do it. But I think there's a lot of value in it. And they can pick and choose. If they want to play no huddle and keep the same five guys on the field, same five eligible receivers I'm talking about there, then they can do that, and they can hopefully have a good chance to wear other teams out. Does not seem to impact Lamar ever to run a two-minute drill. He doesn't ever seem to get tired, I'll tell you that.
But no, never.
The defenders chasing him certainly do, and you watch for hands on hips, and you watch for heavy breathing that typically goes with that, and I think you'll find a lot of other defenses have had trouble with some of the Ravens' long drives. It's definitely something they need to encourage. I actually prefer probably longer, shorter average play length drives than I prefer, going down the field in four plays sometimes, just because I think you take a lot of options away from the defense to do so. If all things being equal, I'll probably take a 13-minute drive over a two-minute drive for a touchdown anyway. Okay, and for obvious reasons, I think to most people who will be listening to the show, you use up more of the game and you have a 7-point lead, that should give you more of an advantage to win the game from that point. It's great to break the back of the opponent, and if you can do it every once in a while, that's fine. You do probably increase the expected points against your defense on the second drive after a 2-minute drive.
Well, yeah, you kind of nailed it, because that's the thing about this year with the Ravens and the historic offense and the great numbers from Lamar is that, and we predicted it going into next year, is they were in a lot of shootouts and they were scoring quickly, which means their defense was on the field a lot. And you saying that also reminds me of kind of the way they played the clock in the 2-minute drill against Buffalo, and they scored too quickly. And you can't say that anybody did any, well, you can. Somebody, they scored too quickly, and that's just that. But you can't get mad at Lamar for throwing this beautiful 40-yard touchdown to Likely while he's improvising and hanging out in the background. They just moved too fast ahead of that play is really what the issue was in that situation.
Yeah, they had their chances to slow that drive down were there. And that was unfortunate that they didn't get that done. It didn't end up mattering. It is something. By the way, I have a presentation I'm making to an actuarial group is about football analytics, and I'm going to put that up on the website at some point in the future. But the presentation won't be until November, and I'll put it up as a video when it's out there. But that the case study for that early score from Likely will be part of that presentation.
Excited to check that out. Yeah, but you're definitely right. The high scoring offense begets high scoring games.
So what else is there that we need to talk about here? He's extended through 2026 now. There's essentially no savings in 25, and more than no savings, it would be a loss because you'd have to replace him, and it's about a zero cap savings. But there is a cut of about $3.25 million in 26. So if they cut him, they would get a savings of $3.25 million. That will be on the table for next year. So in a sense, Hill is playing for his 2026 job in 25. Not that any running back isn't typically in that position, but Hill getting to be a little older, that's a question. I do think that Hill has kind of a fallback that if he were to play a little bit less running back, he could still be valuable to the Ravens as a special teams player. But I don't think they're going to pass up a $3.25 million savings. I think there's too much potential value in a signing of another position player. And it doesn't mean that they wouldn't try and get Hill back on a reduced number, but it could mean that in 26, he's on the line, and he may even be playing for his job in camp that next year.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think the X factor for all of this is what does Mitchell look like, and can he stay healthy if he does look like he's fully back? And those are two things that we just can't know yet.
It's an older group too, so they really need Mitchell. They need Mitchell to step up because it's still only his third season. They have him for two more years, but they're going to also need to draft somebody. And I don't think Ali is the guy. I think that it'll be another guy that they draft, or maybe that is a year one cast off, your rookie or year one cast off from another team that they pick. They had some success doing that with players like Alex Collins. So it was Tyson Williams. He didn't play too much.
Tyson Williams, yeah, the 21. And this was the thing, right? Because I actually forgotten that Hill was lost for that horrible 21 season also. And again, like I had said, I wasn't necessarily a Hill believer at the time. So I was like, oh, Hill's not playing. That's fine. We got Dobbins and Edwards. And of course, they both go down in a matter of days. And the effects of that were seen for, you know, we saw the effects of that for 2 years of, you know, I mean, I was looking back and it's easy to forget. Melvin Gordon was running the ball for this team the last 2 years. Pre-Henry.
Kenyon Drake.
Right. Kenyon Drake with a horrible fumble against the Colts. But I mean, he also had some big games. And I guess it was 22, like the Bucks game or Saints games, things like that.
Yeah. All right. So let's go back to Hill now for a second. Give me what a good season looks like for Justice Hill.
Yeah. So, you know, and I kind of couldn't tell if I wanted to do these for good or great, but just high level, I wanted to also just say, I think the ideal breakdown for the Ravens with their running backs is probably like 50% Henry, 40% Hill, 10% Mitchell. That might be a little low for Mitchell. Maybe there's some overlap and two back sets like we talked about. But talking right about a good season for Hill, I think he stays being an integral piece to, you know, let's call it a top three, top five offense, part of this three-headed monster that we see at running back or envision at running back. 400-plus snaps, you know, he holds on to that third down role and is able to spell Henry as needed. I had said that maybe the Ravens do a little inversion of getting Henry a little of the pass blocking snaps and maybe a little more from Hill kind of dotting the I, as it were. We've seen him and Ricard on the field more than I thought we would have last year, actually, which was interesting when I was rewatching. Continues to be a solid check down option for Lamar and an outlet on extended play situations. And then I was going back to your show from last year where you said what would be a good season from Hill. And I think you guys undershot it a little bit, which was 4 to 6 big plays on the season would be a good season. I said you could make a case that he made at least one big play every game for the Ravens last year. So I put for a good season this coming year, 1 or 2 big plays a game. And you can define that however you want, whether it's the 40-yard wheel route touchdown or the 3rd-and-2 option play that goes for a touchdown against the Chargers. Just making big plays, because that's what makes the Ravens now, is they can hit you from anywhere at any time.
Yeah, a 3rd-and-4 conversion, a 3rd-and-7 conversion is a big play. I mean, that's you don't have to make that be less than what is, even if it only goes for either one, goes for 8 yards. It's a big
there was
play.
The Bengals play this year where it was a 3rd-and-2 and a read option, and he has to bubble outside of the defender. And he takes a very long backwards pass, but he gets the corner eventually, and that's a big play right there. And that was one of the ones that I had written down for a big play in that game, for instance. So yeah, so that's where I'm gonna end up with a good season for Hill.
All right, I've got a good season. I really only want two things. I want him to find a role that complements Henry and Mitchell with a continuation of plus stats on a rate basis. And I'm not even bothered. If it suddenly became that Hill was the number three back, that would be okay. If Mitchell, first of all, I mean, it actually probably be great for the Ravens if Hill became the number three back and Mitchell was all of a sudden breaking out with a right. year like he had. Well, it won't be a year like he had in 23, because that was one of the greatest seasons of all time for a running.
Nobody's ever going to have that year again unless A-Chan goes absolutely nuts in Miami, which we'll see, I guess.
But the other thing is I want to see him be a plus special teams player in whatever role he has. And that'll depend a lot on how much running back he plays. So if he has a reduced running back role, it may be that he returns to a leadership role on special teams. The Ravens may need him there with the loss of the linebackers. They did pick up Jake Kamol, but they lost about 800 special teams inside linebacker snaps with the loss of Board, Harrison, and Welch. So they need to fill those snaps, and they may need to fill it with coverage players. Hill might be a reasonable guy to do that. It is a little bit risky if you're going to rely on an offense a lot, but somebody's got to do that role, and you need to have some players who can play wide receiver and also make tackles on special team, or they can play running back and do it, or they can play corner and do it, or they can play safety and do it. And you certainly need players who can play linebacker and do it. The Ravens can't afford to have with the roster, especially as deep and as talented as is, have any pure special teams players. I'm not buying into that.
You're right.
And even Jake Hummel, who's brought here to basically be that, I think he'll likely to be the special teams captain at some point this year. Jake Hummel is a guy who, part of his value to the Ravens is that he's a above replacement level inside linebacker backup. And so if things were to go really wrong and they were have a couple of injuries at linebacker, Jake Hummel would be a guy who'd be out there on the field playing. And that certainly was the case with Harrison and with Board last year, who had big special teams roles.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about Hill kind of in his non-return roles. We didn't really talk about Hill the returner, and he had some big kick returns this year. The last 2 years, he's had some huge kick returns, and I do think last year both he and Mitchell showed that they can navigate this new return style. So I think it'll be very interesting to see what the Ravens do for kick returns this year. I think Wester is inside track for punt return duties, but I do think it's probably going to be some combination of Hill and Mitchell. And obviously, I never quite understand why they choose one over the other, because they went back and forth between them late in the year a little bit, it seemed like.
Part of it may just be that they want to keep their running back fresh and safe. The guy's actually getting more carries. So was Hill last year. But right. you need two guys deep in the current formations. I mean, you can't afford to have one side of the field uncovered or have play a single high or a single low, whatever you want to call it. Look,
on pickup. That's a great point.
Yeah, you need to have one on each side, and I think that the Ravens anyway are there, but there also are rules. There are rules about how many players have to line up in certain areas of the field with the current kickoff rule. So it might be they're limited to eight that can line up at the, I forget what yard line it is even now, whether it's the 30 or the 25 or whatever it is.
Right. But
the new kickoff rule, a lot more returns are coming this year. They'll be forced because the penalty is so significant now, starting at the 35 yard line.
Yeah. So, I mean, big opportunity for both of those running backs. Absolutely.
All right. How about a great season? What does that look like for Hill?
Great season for Hill. Again, I'm kind of going to give you a twofold, because one of these versions doesn't bode well for the Ravens necessarily. So the less good for the team, but great for Hill would be he has to fill in, and maybe it's a Hill and Mitchell combination, or God forbid, Hill and unnamed running back three. Maybe that's a Lee or running back four, I guess, as it were. But given that role, excels in it, maybe the Ravens can, assuming this is obviously unassuming a very unfortunate loss to Henry for any amount of time, can weather that storm. That would be a great, season for Hill. More in a vacuum, or rather more, kind of big picture for the team, a great season for Hill would just be kind of what you were saying, which is just plugging gaps as needed, maybe. Taking on a bigger special teams return role, maybe, just kind of continuing to grow in that third down role. Maybe it is that he has to take more first down snaps and touches, but just kind of filling in whatever is needed to make sure the Ravens offense is still humming.
It's kind of analogous. I love how you put it there, but it's kind of analogous to the second true back end safety that the Ravens don't currently have, as far as I know. Sunusi Kane. Yep. Bo Braid or unknowns, Hamilton, they don't want to use there. But if you have that second guy, then Hamilton can come up and play. Hill could support the return of Mitchell to more regular play. I don't know if the Ravens have figured it out right now who they really want on the field more between those two, between Hill and Mitchell. But if Mitchell ends up being the guy, that could be fine. And Hill could be the supporting player who takes whatever role is left over and maybe takes over an additional special teams role that could include more kickoff returns going to Hill. And I think it would if you're depending on Mitchell to be a running back more.
Right.
And it could very well be that Mitchell is needed on the field to be the misdirection element if LaJonte Wester doesn't work out for any reason. It could be that Wester gets hurt, obviously. You really wouldn't want that, because that's a lot of your punt return game is gone if Wester is out for that. But anyway, I think Hill can, like that safety who can play the back end, like that old Geno Stone role that there was. Not only can he provide value being the running back, he can also provide value just being the insurance policy, and being a guy who can play certain downs and do certain responsibilities that you like well, and then move and play a special teams role and help support a player like Mitchell in terms of what things they do well, because he plays other snaps well.
Yeah, I mean, right. The fact about it with Hill is that, like, he showed the growth in kind of the scat back, satellite back kind of realm this year. But watch the Buffalo playoff game. Hill is getting under center and ripping off 10-plus yard runs multiple times in that game, especially in the second half where they decided, like, we're just going to just run the hell out of the ball right now and level this thing off. Like, Hill was going crazy in the cold in that Buffalo game. I mean, that was one of the more impressive games you'll see from him. That and then the divisional round the year before against the Texans, where you see him running with a physicality that, like, I had never seen from him before in that same way. So, yeah, I think we can, like, that's the beauty in a player like this who knows the system, knows Lamar, knows Monken, and, like, has these leadership qualities that he can really fill a lot of different roles. And that's a great season, right? The great season is not counting stats. It's helping the team success.
All right. I'll read up briefly what I have for great season. Monken finds a new way to utilize him and Mitchell to emphasize speed and create misdirection. Stays on the field on third downs as part of pony schemes. Expect a decrease from 611 scrimmage yards. He's going to have a very hard time getting to that again. It was a very good year for him. But I said that last year as well, and he did actually increase from, I think it was 593 the year before, to 611. So, maybe he can maintain this level. But the Ravens keep him under the current contract for 2026 or extend him. So either way, I think would really be a feather in his cap, that if he were to stay on with the current contract, I think that'd be very good for him. It would say very good things about him. If they extended him, it'd obviously say even better things.
Definitely. Yeah. No, you're right. You often bring that point up, that the real telltale sign of how good or great of a season it is what is the contract situation tied to it?
Yeah. All right. Ben, always a pleasure talking football with you. Great to have you on again. Where can folks talk football with you online?
Yeah, I'm still hanging on Twitter at Classic Mihal, M-I-H-A-L. Happy to talk Ravens, not happy to talk about firing Harbaugh or anything like that. But yeah, no, still, expecting a good season from the 25 Ravens, absolutely.
There's still a few people out there who talk about it, and there'll always be a minority of people. In putting out the feelers for people wanted to come on the air and discuss it, I found people are willing to do it on a collegial level, like they want to do it what's the word, devil's advocate basis. Yep. But they don't really want to take the position of he's an idiot. And there's a lot of people out there who basically say he's an idiot. I don't need to defend that statement. It's obvious. You're not going to have me on a panel discussion to talk about that.
Right.
I'd rather be boiled in oil. But if you do want to come on and talk about that, hey, I'm still looking for somebody who wants to do that. And I'd love to find a couple, so whoever it is doesn't feel like they're being, lined up for a firing squad. I don't really want that situation. What I really want to have is just somebody who understands in a very balanced way what are the pros and cons of John Harbaugh. And if you can't see any pros, there's probably a mistake here. He's lasted a long time in the National Football League and been awfully successful for a guy that doesn't have one single pro that you can name. And that's that. I do have found some of that. They just hate him so much that they can't even bring themselves to find one positive about it, which I think is fairly silly when you get right down to it.
Yeah, I mean, it's complicated. The Ravens' success over the Harbaugh era speaks for itself. Obviously, the playoff success or lack thereof is obviously frustrating, but hard to tie directly to Harbaugh. And that's the whole thing about the 24 Ravens into the 25, or really the 23 and 24. These are two amazing teams that just fell short when it mattered most. And all they can do is roll the same team back out, or as close of an approximation as possible, make some small, improvements on the margins. And we just got to hope for the best health-wise and then success-wise as we get into December and beyond.
All right. Folks out there, please like and subscribe if you're looking at this on YouTube. Please take the time to help somebody else subscribe to this podcast who you think might like it. If they're open to that, or maybe they don't know how to subscribe to a podcast, help them do it. And they'll get a download every day, maybe listen on their way to work or when they have some free time at home, whatever it might be. Thanks again to all the listeners and the loyalty you've had. Really appreciate it. The growth of the pod has been very good, and we certainly appreciate all of you. Ben, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line, now 20% lower. Family plans, also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.